We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dame Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Prize Picks, coming at you Thursday evening. Now it's March 28th. I am now out here in Denver for Wolves Nuggets. So did not obviously make my content plan around this whole Wolves ownership deal coming to a head. This episode, the plan was just to be myself, Adam Mares, and Harrison Wynn, who both cover the Nuggets, just to discuss the, obviously an awesome, interesting Wolves Nuggets matchup tomorrow. And we do discuss some of the ownership stuff toward the end of the episode there. But honestly, it's a tricky topic. It's a sensitive subject from a legal standpoint that I think we all are still trying to gather information on. So while I've been trying to talk to some people for some information on the topic today, I do still just kind of want to tread lightly. Kyle and I are going to do another episode on Saturday morning, and maybe we'll have a little bit more information, a little bit more stuff that we feel comfortable bringing up then. But as I'm sure you've all seen and read, the other local reporters have been all over the ownership topic today. I'd recommend going to read Jace, Chris, and John's work. They all talked to Glenn Taylor directly today and got a whole bunch of quotes, a whole bunch of information. I'm sure all of you who are care enough about the Wolves to be listening to this podcast have been kind of tracking along with the press release and everything that's been going on today. And that's kind of where we are at for the time being. I think just the biggest thing I have gathered today that I do feel comfortable sharing is that this disconnect goes back between Glenn Taylor and Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez. I think the disconnect has been present for some time now, even dating back a couple of years. That's obviously been apparent in Taylor's comments over the last few months, but it's also just becoming apparent that there has been a pretty major disconnect as to who held power and who had the autonomy to make this decision or that decision, and just some conflict that's been going on there. There's been a lot going on. And my hope, just at the end of the day, for all Wolves fans, is that you receive honesty and transparency as soon as that can happen. You all deserve that. You're all locked in on this season. Many of you are season ticket holders and literally invested in this product as well. So we got good reporters on it. This is a tricky topic. I don't include myself in as one of those, but this is gonna take some digging into in ways that, you know, me being a reporter who covers basketball and asks about drop coverage might be a little bit out of my depth. But I'm gonna try and give it everything I got and gather the information I can and talk about it. I think this is probably going to be a saga for a while. But as Britt said this morning on the pod when we were recording, this shouldn't have any immediate impact on Wolves basketball. They will play the Nuggets on Friday night, and it will be an important, obviously, and probably very fun game. And that's what Adam, Harrison, and I discussed on this episode of the basketball. I actually thought it was a great discussion. I'm back at my hotel now, recording this open after recording with the two of them about an hour ago. Just as a heads up for how the episode flows, I mean, I've done this four or five times when I've come out to Denver. We kind of repurpose an episode so it could go on my feed and on their feed. So Adam is leading the conversation here. He's great. It sounds more like I'm a guest on the show, which I guess I am. But yeah, they use this for their podcast feed as well. I just want to let you know when Adam starts talking, don't think that your podcast player has gone off in a different direction. I do appreciate you listening. I'm sorry. this is happening today. I think someday we will figure this whole thing out. Someday this will no longer be the weirdest team ever, but for now it is. We'll jump into that conversation with Adam and Harrison after a quick break to remind you that this show is brought to you by Prize Picks. You can go to prizepicks.com or the Prize Picks app to take a look at stat projections laid out for Friday's Wolves Nuggets matchup. In this episode, Adam, Harrison, and I discuss Nikola Jokic's relatively low or relative inability to rack up assists against the Wolves. Recently, Jokic does only have 5 total assists in 2 games against the Wolves this season. He also had single-digit assists in 3 of the 5 games in last spring's Wolves Nuggets playoff series. So I don't know. Check out where that number is tomorrow on Prize Picks. And if you do create an account at prizepicks.com or on the Prize Picks app, make sure to use the promo code DANE for a $100 sign-up bonus.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to a very bonus edition of the DNVR Nuggets podcast. Mixing it up a little bit, as we may be doing throughout this playoff run, adding some audio-only features. Could be interviews and different things that we have going on, but just a little bit of extra audio-only content. I'm Adam Mattes. I'm joined. Harrison Wins in the house.
What's up, guys? Tough loss last night. Tough loss.
Such a bummer. It really is. The Nuggets, these ones that don't mean anything, but they mean everything to us.
With all due respect to the Timberwolves, losing to the Suns is the worst thing.
Really?
Yeah.
It's weird because it's the worst. The Timberwolves, yeah, and our other guest here, of course, is Dane Moore, covering the Timberwolves, and I don't know, there's a big Timberwolves game coming up, Dane.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to be here for that game. I'm actually excited to, you know, talk to you guys about it too. I feel like every other time I've come on here, you guys are like, oh yeah, you know, like the you could come in. We'll
you
talk
caught us
to
on
you.
A bad day.
You talk to us about, you
yeah.
know,
your the little AC. Timberwolves. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
so cute.
Yeah. It's different now. A little bit different.
Should we go over the lessons we learned from the championship and just kind of the trials and tribulations along the way?
But in all sincerity, I appreciate this actually perspective from you, because it has been really neat. Look, Denver and Minnesota are very similar in a lot of ways as NBA franchises. And Denver now having it, it's funny to be on the other side. You spent your whole life on the other side of the fence. And so you saying that, like, Denver was always the little pat on the head. So it is funny that now you view Denver as patting the Timberwolves on the head.
Well, we all started on like the same level. We always, I feel like every single time we do this, we talk about Game 82 Taj stripping Jokic and all that. It was like, you know, like these teams are going to rise together. That did not happen. But it's cool. Yeah. To the idea that it was the two little brother franchises that are, you know, here now and at the same level competing with each other. I mean, obviously the Nuggets have the pedigree and the championship and all that. I mean, I'm not putting the Wolves on the Nuggets level, but I'm saying they're a threat as much as anybody in the West is, I think.
I mean, you're not putting them on Denver's level. Why?
They have Nikola Jokic. Who, I mean, while the Wolves have some answers for him, we've talked about that before, and I think we should talk about that again. I respect that, and I respect when I watch Denver and the way they work together. They look consistently like a championship team, and to the Wolves' credit, they've looked like an elite regular season team consistently this year. They never lost more than 2 games in a row all season. I keep raising my own personal bar of what I think it is, and it's getting up to that level. But when I think about the playoffs and I think about reliability and I think about consistency, I think about what I know I'm going to get from Nikola Jokic, and then what I think I'm going to get from the Timberwolves as a whole. I think we know Ant's going to deliver in the playoffs. But this is new. There's the Carl element that he's injured and all these different things. I don't think it's selling the Wolves short. It's just
they haven't done it yet, right? And we need to see what it looks like stress tested in the playoffs. But they've answered so many of those, that list of questions to me this year. They've answered so many of those questions to feel confident at this point in the season that they could be in the Western Conference Finals with the Denver Nuggets.
I think we were in a similar position last year where we thought we had this juggernaut. Mm-hmm. The Nuggets were a juggernaut in the regular season. You know, mm-hmm. they were number one in the West for a lot of the year, like the Wolves were. But there was always this sense of, all right, like, we just have to see it in the playoffs, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then there's just, like, the Wolves have some answers to the main things that Denver does, I think. But then it just in that last game, and I know the Wolves weren't at full strength, but it's like, okay, you're doing a good job against Nikola Jokic in this game. But here's Michael Porter Jr., you know, who hit whatever, 3-4 threes right. at the end of that time there. It's like there's a depth to Denver, too, of a multiple ways in which that they can mm-hmm. hurt this team. Even if the Wolves have as many answers for the main thing as any team in the NBA might have.
Here's another thing that happens with Denver that I think is important. And again, you don't know any of this stuff till you get to the playoffs. And sometimes teams develop this in the playoffs. It's like they don't know if they have it either. And they learn what it takes, survive a series, and then they're better for it. And maybe this happens for the Wolves. But one thing that happens to Denver, when you talk about Michael Porter gets going, their offense and defense, but mostly their offense, is designed as such that there's an answer for every counter you put out there. Because the pieces fit. So I think in a series, one thing we'll see a lot of is game one, Jokic goes off. And it's like, all right, we got to adjust. We got to send the double. And it's like, okay, game two, Murray goes off. And then team's like, all right, we got to play this defense now. We're going to do this. Game three, MPJ goes off. And it's like, okay, now we have a new hole and we shift. And I think that's one of the things that makes Denver so encouraging, especially in a playoff series, is they, one, have seen everything. So they know the answer. They can adjust quickly. But two, game by game, they can kind of look at it and say, this is where a team's finding success, and here's how we bend ourselves to put pressure. This is one of my – I have two questions about the Timberwolves. Their late-game offense is one of these, but this idea is the other one. They have depth of good players, but I don't know if it's that same dynamic where, oh, a team is going to overload in this direction, so we're naturally going
to – What's the progression down of, like, what's A, what's B, what's C? Yeah. And the Wolves don't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of finding it right now. But it's weird because Cat has to be A, B, or C, and he's not that right now. But I don't know how much you guys have seen of the Wolves recently, like the late game stuff isn't an issue right now. I mean, it was when Cat was there early in the season, halfway through the season. But I mean, the way Ant is playing when they're putting two on the ball and getting off of that, and he really ran into that wall back around like Christmas where he was like, all right, they're double tripling me in the fourth quarter. And he just tried to push through it. Now he's getting off of it, but because there's not another great number two option, it's going to come back to him. So they put two on the ball, get off of it. The next possession, he knows he's going to get it back. And that, I think, has unlocked something in Ant's head of like, okay, I can make the right play more often, even if I'm the best option, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So you know who's the best? This is how I would describe it. Luka Doncic, to me, is the best at when you put two on ball, he's unbothered. It doesn't speed him up. He doesn't pick up his dribble. He just kind of stays where he's at, waits for everything else to settle, and then makes the pass, and he could throw it to any of the four guys. This is the thing with Anthony Edwards that I think he is not good at, but is getting a lot better at very quickly, and maybe it is as simply as taking Karl-Anthony Towns off. Now, if you put two on ball, he's been a lot more controlled, especially in this like last five, six games, a lot more controlled late of not just panicking, not pick up the dribble. Now the team can rotate, the defense can rotate behind him. But okay, let me drag them out a couple extra feet, mm-hmm. step through and make the pass. And now everybody's scrambling and it's 4-on-3. So to me, it actually would be probably line item number one on why I would doubt the Wolves. But now recently saying, well, maybe not. Maybe this is a thing that he's learning. I don't know if he's learned it enough to the degree to win a championship. But it is going to be probably pressure point number one for the Timberwolves is how well he handles those specific things.
And how does he handle when it is the playoffs and when it's the fourth quarter, making that decision to get off the ball, even if that's the right thing to do, because everything else, and particularly at 22 years old and with the skill set that he has, you know, the answer in your head is going to be you a lot of the time. And he's been making the right decision in March.
Yeah.
This might be different in April and May, but I'm really encouraged by it. We would have had this conversation 2 months ago. I'd be like, yeah, unless the Wolves have found a way to get up by 10 on Denver with 5 minutes left in the game, I think Denver's going to win that. But now it's changing some with the gigantic elephant in the room that isn't in the room, you know, that cat's not there. That's the looming
So that's
question.
Really clarified things for him, and
it's just
game.
Made it cleaner. Yeah. In I mean, and it's not just late game. There's just I mean, they were 17th in offense when Cat went down. Like, they have not been a good offensive team for I mean, obviously elite defensive team, and that's fueled so much of this. But they never when Cat was there really found. Like, there's like no period of 2 weeks, if you look at it all year, where they were like a top 10 offense. They just never have. They never hit that, and now it's finally happening once Cat's off. But that doesn't mean that they're better off with Cat. That it doesn't. It's about, can you reincorporate Cat into this, into the Naz Reid role? Play more like Naz Reid. Play more decisively. Shoot 8 threes a game, mm-hmm. and then now you have Naz off the bench, where they're making up Naz's minutes with like Monte Morris right now, and that sounds weird, but like that backfill part of it, they can, moving Naz back to the bench is a huge boon, I think, for the offense too, if you have Cat doing what Naz has been doing, if that makes sense. So there's certainly room for this offense to level up a lot more, but can that happen in the playoffs? That's the question.
Yeah, Naz seems to be the guy that has gotten the biggest bump of this. And I guess it's not surprising because Karl-Anthony Towns goes out. That's the guy that replaces him. But to your point, they're not just playing him in the same role. And yet he's averaging in the last 10, 20 points a game. He's their second leading scorer. So is
he's taking like 8 threes a game.
He's nasty, dude. He's nasty. I mean, he's just good.
And he always kills the Nuggets, too.
He kills a lot of teams.
Everyone. I think everybody feels that way.
I know. The Warriors sure do. Like, he's just, I mean, he's got the game. You know, he's got an off the dribble game. He hasn't even really put all the stuff together. Like last night, I think he shot 8 of 10 from 2 and 1 of 8 from 3. He hasn't even really put the at the basket game together in a, you know, 5 for 7 3-point shooting game. Like, I think there's another level to him too, because there's just, you can't put 2 on him. You can't prioritize Naz Reid.
Well, yeah, okay. Just from a priority standpoint.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you just start going down the pecking order of, I mean, even with Rudy is a big reason why it's even hard to put 2 on Ant, because if you have Rudy diving, they got to throw 2 at that, basically, at least for a second to be able, it just that things open up so much that you have pretty dynamic offensive players. I put Conley in that too, to be able to play in really simplistic situations. And I think that's what Ant and Rudy do individually, and it makes it easier for everybody else, and particularly for the role players who are just taking wide open corner threes all the time. Yeah. Like, the Wolves lead the league in 3-point percentage. They got like 5 or 6 guys shooting over 40%. Like, it's easy offense because of the attention that not only Ant gets, but Rudy gets too. So if they can just play, flow, it could be a dangerous offense. It's just hard for me to be like, I know that's going to happen in the playoffs.
Yeah. So let's talk about the 3-point shooting. You know, my guy, the guy that's most intriguing to me and who I think is a pivot point for this Wolves team is Nickeil Alexander-Walker. And he's lights out right now as a 3-point shooter. But do you buy it? And just like, how big of a piece do you think? Because I see him as like this pivotal piece, even though he's a bench guy. But do you see him that way?
I was not a believer in Nickeil early because I didn't like the shot. I didn't like what
it's disgusting looking.
Yeah.
It still looks the same.
It still does, but dude, it's consistent. It's consistent in the mechanics of it. It's weird mechanics. But that's why, like, when he came here about this time last year, game to game, and you go through, look at the shots, and you're like, this game, the jumper looked this one way, the other, you know, the next game it looked a different way. And I'm like, yeah, he's shooting 45% over the last 2 weeks, but I think a dip is coming, and that happened. He has had no dip in his effectiveness offensively. And I think why you love him, Adam, is the consistency of effort you see from him defensively every night. I mean, it's like, well, Rudy's going to win Defensive Player of the Year. Jaden maybe is going to get all defensive team. But Nickeil has better, like, defensive estimated plus minus numbers.
You know what it is? Here's what it is. Because rim protection for a while was the word, right? That was the most important. Mm-hmm. So it's only going to be a big man that wins. I think the most important defensive trait right now is fighting through screens off ball.
Staying with your guy
off screens, because it allows you to do so many different things defensively.
And that's what KCP does better than maybe anybody in the NBA.
Finch agrees with you guys too. Like, that's
really
what he's just hammered the importance of. I mean, I guess you're saying more screen navigation, but
screen navigation and pick and roll is also screen navigation.
Just point of attack, staying into the ball.
Yep.
Like, when this Wolves team's defense is at its best, there's like a pursuit to it that I don't see when I watch any other team in the league. And you know, if it's a back-to-back, you're maybe not going to get that, but I think you're going to get that in the playoffs pretty much every single night. And there's a big guys pursuing you. Jaden's gigantic, you know, like it is just extremely difficult. You don't get easy looks against them. You don't run easy actions against the Wolves because they are selling out on the perimeter because they know they got Rudy on the backside. Like it's what they've put together defensively is special. And it starts with Rudy, but what's made it not just the best defense, but like the best defense with separation, I think, is the perimeter defenders and not just being good individual defenders, but buying into a specific way of playing that defense. They're tough, man. They're tough.
So let's talk about this game tomorrow because
I really appreciate we haven't even brought up the ownership thing.
Well, I think we'll save it for the end. I don't, because I'm not sure. It's like super interesting to me, but I don't know if it's interesting. I feel like that's the one that'll cut off some of the audience. So we'll get to it at the end. Really interesting ownership situation going on.
Today's show is brought to you by your home improvement company. And if you have a home improvement project you are considering, we like to say keep it in the Wolves family by going to your home improvement company. You can go to yhic.com or call for a free consultation at 844-270-7180. Your home improvement company has a windows deal going on right now where it's you purchase two windows, you get two free, zero down, zero interest, zero payments till 2025. They are top quality windows. You know, might be that time of year. It's spring. Get the job rolling there. Or if you have a bathroom project you've been considering, whether that's a complete bathroom makeover or just a simple bath or shower conversion, your home improvement company is going to exceed your expectations by getting that project done well and done quickly. They can get some of these done in as little as one day. Oftentimes, you got to book these things well out into the future. So if you are wanting to make that happen and make that happen quick, a bathroom renovation, again, go to your home improvement company. You can do that by going to yhic.com or by calling 844-270-7180. As always, zero down, zero interest, zero payments till 2025. Your home improvement company, where it's your home made better. Today's show is brought to you by Adriana Lonick, who you can find at thedancingrealtor.com. Adriana is a realtor with Coldwell Banker Realty. And if you are in that stage where you are thinking about starting the process of purchasing a home or selling your home, the next step you're going to have to make is getting a realtor. And we want you to consider Adriana. How you do that is by going to, again, thedancingrealtor.com to set up a free consultation with Adriana, a consultation where she can walk you through personalized steps for what it's going to take for you to buy or sell your home. And we are offering a perk. Those of you who set up a free consultation with Adriana this month will be entered into a drawing for a pair of Wolves tickets to a game down the stretch. Adriana is a Wolves fan and a season ticket holder. And we just know that so much of the buying process or selling process of a home is about where to even begin. And the reality of the situation is it starts with a conversation with someone who will walk you through it at your pace. So go to thedancingrealtor.com. You can find that in the show notes or call 715-304-9920 to book a consultation. And like I said, mention this podcast and get entered to win a pair of free Timberwolves tickets when you book that consultation. Get the ball rolling on home ownership and score a pair of free Wolves tickets at thedancingrealtor.com.
But let's get to this game because obviously Friday night's a big one. They play two times, both of them in Denver now, and I'm guessing both of them will be without Karl Anthony Towns, obviously tomorrow, but I'm guessing he's just not back at the regular season. So, Harrison, I'll start with you. This last game, Denver, the last game against Minnesota, Denver clearly seemed to take that game like it was entitled to them. I thought it was a poor performance, but they won anyway, which is what they do against teams they, you know, feel like it's going to be easy against. But tomorrow, I have a feeling that they're going to be locked in. I mean, I know we're saying this on the, they were the least locked in we've ever seen them on Wednesday, but I think they're going to be locked in Friday.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, the biggest question is Jamal Murray playing? I thought he was going to play against the Suns.
Can't believe he didn't.
I really did.
Why? Like, what's the... I know the context of the injury, but why did you think that?
He missed the last couple games before that, and it seemed like they were, like, ramping up. Who were the last two games against?
Memphis.
Portland and Memphis.
Portland and Memphis. Yeah, two games that, like, the Nuggets could win without, like, Nikola Jokic, you know?
Did.
Yeah. And so... It felt like they were ramping up him and Aaron Gordon, who missed a game too, like to play against Phoenix. And then Aaron Gordon played, but Jamal Murray didn't. And so, like, the matchup I immediately look to is McDaniels on Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
Like, and if it's McDaniels on Jamal Murray when Jamal Murray isn't 100%, like, that automatically makes things really interesting.
Well, first of all, if he doesn't play, I have to assume it's a big deal because tomorrow is as important of a regular season game as you can get.
Right.
So if he doesn't, like, he would play even at 80% or 70%. I don't know what the number is, but he would play. So if he doesn't play tomorrow, you have to assume, like, okay, something's up here. But, all right, so going into it, we think Nuggets are bringing their A game, assuming Jamal Murray is there. Or even if he's not, I just think they're going to be dialed in. State of the Timberwolves?
I just want to see these teams play each other at as much of full strength as possible. You know, I'm really interested in this from a matchup standpoint in that, like, the calculus, I think, for Denver has changed in how you might guard the Wolves. Like, if you think back to the playoffs last season, they kind of prioritized Cat. They had Gordon on Cat. And that was the way they went. And not to take anything away from KCP, but, like, unless it's a strong defender, Ant's not going to have problems with it. Like, he's not going to have problems with KCP.
What about Caruso? Like, Alex Caruso. How does he do against him? Because I think KCP is a similar player.
Well, we only get that one. We've only had that one once this year.
Is there another, like, of this type
of
guard?
We asked Ant about it. He brought up Lu Dort and Dylan Brooks.
Lu Dort is strong. Dylan Brooks is strong. So, yeah, that is a different mold of player.
Well, I think it's like the example I use is I think Nikhil is a great defender. He would have absolutely nothing for Anthony Edwards. And he's thinner and a little bit smaller than KCP is. But the way I think when I put on my Denver hat, I'm doing everything I can to take away Ant. That's where it all starts.
Yeah.
And I'm putting Aaron Gordon on Ant. And I'm saying, and particularly if Kat's coming back at whatever percentage he's coming back at, like, put MPJ on him. I honestly would. And you double that, like, if you're going to go to the post, Carl doesn't, if you just guard him with the smaller player and you double him, he's not great at playing off of that. Like, but I would prioritize Ant. I would put Aaron Gordon on him.
Well, you first of all, we'll go back because I want to talk about this game. So no Carl Anthony Towns for now. The Anthony Edwards piece, it sounds to me like this is a Christian Brown game. Because this is the thing about Denver. They have four defenders that I think this year and probably going forward they're going to sink or swim with. Aaron Gordon and KCP, everybody knows. Peyton Watson and Christian Brown. And all four of them are different in who they guard and what types of players they're best at. Christian Brown, in theory, is the one that has the strength, length, size, and, like, discipline, in theory, to stay with them.
Mm-hmm. But the Dallas game, they put Gordon on Luka. What was that, 2 weeks ago or
but
whatever?
Luka's 6'8".
I know, but
6'8", 240 or something.
As strong
is he? He's not as strong as Luka.
You got to give me he's close.
No, it's a different type of strength. I feel.
Sure.
I mean, he's more explosive, but Luka's strong. Luka's because he's a wide body.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with Gordon, pretty thick too.
He is strong. It's just a different type of strength.
I agree with that.
So the Nuggets last night ran a lineup that they never have this season, and it was probably the reason they lost the game.
It definitely was.
The second quarter, with Nikola Jokic off the floor, they put Peyton Watson at the five with, like, an all-bench lineup and Reggie Jackson, and they got torched on the offensive glass. Like, it was bad. They probably lost the game because of it. And a reason Michael Malone did that is because he did not want to play Aaron Gordon at backup center, which he actually ended up doing in the second half, but he doesn't want to burn Aaron Gordon out because he knows he's got to put him at center, backup center in the playoffs, and he's already battling some injuries. So I wonder if they want him to chase Anthony Edwards around for, like, an entire game.
But does that line up? Like, wouldn't guarding Cat be more like guarding a center and playing the five and be more physically taxing than chasing it? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, that's...
In the playoffs, they don't care about wearing Aaron Gordon out. And then in this, I just feel like this game is a different game. I think Yoke plays 36 minutes, 37 minutes tomorrow.
Well, he played 40 plus last night.
Maybe he plays 40, actually. I just think that Denver treats this one as, hey, if this one's worth two, because it is worth two, basically. Mm-hmm. So if you win it, you have a big upper hand. So I wouldn't worry so much about that portion of it. I honestly just think more about what is the best matchup. He's in that in-between size. Christian Brown probably will get a lot of minutes on him. And I don't know if Aaron Gordon is the primary assignment tomorrow night.
I don't think the Nuggets are going to, like, go as hard as you do for this game.
Why?
I really don't think the number one seed is something they have their focus on.
Really?
I don't. I think health is the number one priority by a long shot. And like, yeah, they're going to try to win the game. Yeah, they'll play Jokic 40 minutes, but I don't think they're going to throw all their cards on the table for this game. I personally don't.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's really a game. I mean, it's a game for the one seed, which means it's really a game for home court advantage when these teams play in a month if it gets there, right? And to that end, you don't know. It's like what I've been saying the whole time with the one seed is like there isn't the reward of a cake eight this year. You know, and I like what I had been saying. Now Houston is awesome, apparently, but I was like, Houston would be like the normal eighth seed, where it's like if any of these teams, OKC, Minnesota, Denver, get them. It's like, okay, that's four, five games.
And
you
Houston's
know?
A great story, man. But I'm sorry, whether Minnesota or Denver, I'm not afraid of Amen Thompson, the starting center.
No, yeah.
Like, come on, man, that's a cute story,
but that's what I'm saying is it's not like I think to Harrison's point is it's like if you are Denver or if you are Minnesota and you are the two. Or even if you're the three, you're still kind of playing those same six, seven, eight teams. And I don't know, like, if there's a real matchup you guys prefer there. But for the Wolves, like, I change my mind all the time of, like, between Dallas, Phoenix, and Sacramento of who would be best for them. So there's not, like, there's not that early round incentive, I don't think, to get an easier matchup with whoever it is, you know, that you're going to be playing there. So I get that. I just hope, like,
I hope
it's a real game, you know.
I think it matters more. Like, look, I think Denver and Minnesota are both more likely to be one than two. I almost feel like it's going to be one or three because they play each other.
Right.
So that there's this chance of two extra losses, and then that means Oklahoma City is going to be one or two. So I think that's one of these dynamics. And then the way I look at it is, I'm with you. I don't care about the first round because they're all hard, but they're all you should win. Mm-hmm. It's the second round. If you end up having to be a three seed and going on the road and playing an Oklahoma City or a Minnesota, that's significantly harder than being at home and playing a Pelicans or a Clippers, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So that's to me is where I care about the seeding. And I wonder if Denver is arriving at that. When they started saying they don't care about seeding, that was a month ago. Things change.
I'm talking about last night. Last night, they're all about health.
I wonder if it's because they're scared about their health at the moment with this Murray thing. I mean, just to reiterate the Murray piece of this, it was about a week ago, exactly a week ago, it was Thursday. He goes down at the very end of the game, last 20 seconds of the game, he goes down with an ankle injury.
Yeah.
On Saturday, it was listed as an ankle injury. And I think on Monday's game, it was listed as a knee injury.
Yeah. Yesterday, they changed it to a knee.
I think it came in first for the Memphis game.
It was an ankle for that game.
Really? Because I thought I had already been mentally aware of this knee part of it. Either way.
They said it on the broadcast. I was watching the Memphis game, and they said knee, ankle, and shin splints.
And shin splints.
I was watching, that was the first I heard of the knee, because I knew about the shin splints,
right.
And I saw the ankle thing. Whatever, he's not healthy. I think at the end of the day, Jamal Murray is not healthy.
But that's why I'm saying, like, when you do this job, you have to, like, read between the lines. You read a lot of tea leaves.
I'm doing a lot of that today.
When a team is reiterating after a horrible loss to the Suns, when they're reiterating health over one seed, it makes me think, well, that means they're worried about health. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not as worried about the one seed. They're more worried because health is more of a pressing issue for the team. So that's what worries me about Jamal Murray. If he's not there, then what does the texture of this game take for Minnesota?
Well, then that, you know, that just changes up where who you're putting Jane McDaniels on. And if you don't
guard,
he would guard Murray. But now I really like Jaden off ball as like a weak side rim protector. I think that, and you can do that because you can put Nikhil on if Reggie Jackson starts or whatever. You don't have to put Jaden at the point of attack all the time, which one taxes him physically, which leads to a little bit less offense from him, and he's more likely to get in foul trouble. So I just, in general, in the playoffs, I would like to see Jaden not, like, every single game, when I'm looking the first possession, who's everyone guard? Jaden guards the dude every single time. And I'm not sure that is always even the best idea. I think this allows them to do different things. And now if you have Jaden, like, probably put Kyle Anderson on Jokic, Gobert will probably try to do the help thing, but now Jaden can be there to help too. Like that, if Jaden doesn't have, I guess the simple way to say it is Jaden doesn't have to guard Jamal Murray. He can help even more on Jokic, which is a win, you know, obviously. For
and
the
maybe you can make the Nuggets take 43s like they took last night. I mean, the Suns game plan last night was obvious. No Jamal Murray. Like, okay, we're just going to force the ball out of Nikola Jokic's hands. He's going to make the right play. and we're just going to let Reggie Jackson take seven threes.
Right.
And he made one of them, I think. So the game plan's right there.
And for Phoenix, I think that game plan's easier to execute for the reasons you're saying. You would end up having basically Gobert and Jaden McDaniels off ball, which is two better off ball sagging off defenders than anybody that Phoenix had. So you have a lot of length to do it. Denver should come up with a different game plan. Here's the other part of it. So you don't think Gobert would guard Jokic even without Cat? Because typically
happened last year. Remember last year? Cat was out. Kyle guarded Jokic.
How did it go? I don't remember.
The Wolves won that game.
This was a regular season game?
Regular season game at Target Center. The Nuggets were healthy. I remember I looked this up whenever they played the Nuggets most recently. I went back to look because I thought I remember that. I went and looked at like the first quarter clips and Kyle guarded him. Yeah. I would be shocked if Kyle Anderson doesn't well, I mean, the thing is Nas has been starting now, but they've been kind of interchanging that. I think I would start Nas.
I tell you, another path to victory tomorrow specifically for the Wolves is that Nas Reed is a plus 25 against whoever it is Denver rolls out at their backup center. And like that, Denver loses a lot of games that way.
It's going to be DeAndre Jordan tomorrow.
They'll have to put DeAndre Jordan. Like, Nas is more dynamic than DeAndre at 40 years old or whatever.
I honestly wouldn't even do DeAndre Jordan. I guard Nas like he's a wing.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't think the Nuggets are ever throwing that lineup out there again.
They might not. I think Malone's too bad at it.
I think they put Watson on Nas. I was thinking about this. I think Watson will guard Nas.
And maybe that's why last night they tried it out, is an anticipation. Yeah, right. Honestly, you go to a lineup that you've never gone to.
Maybe
in
it's
game
the
72.
Secret death lineup.
It might have been a, hey, we need this for Nas. Let's go see if you can do this.
They got run off the floor by Thad Young.
So Thad Young is like, we got killed by Thad Young. No way you're stopping Nas. I think here's one thing, and tell me if you agree with this, Harrison, or not. Denver in the last 365 days, so it was a thing that was happening at some point last year, mainly in the back half of last year, happened in the playoffs, happened in the early part of this year. I think Denver and Jokic in particular is figuring out that defense, the put a small on Jokic and use the big rim protector as a roamer.
Yeah.
That has caused Denver problems for the last year, but I think in the last, I don't know, 2-3 months, Jokic has looked a lot more comfortable with. I think he's figured out how to attack that.
Well, they've just seen it so many times now. It's probably been the most popular adjustment that they've seen this season. Like, you start with your base defense, and that's the first adjustment every team's kind of made this year.
Yeah.
So they definitely are way more ready for it. What was so interesting, though, about this game last night was they doubled Jokic a lot, and he was just really content with making the right play, just passing to the open guy. He wasn't really trying to force the issue like he might in the playoffs. You know, if the double's coming in the playoffs, he'll go early, he'll go quick, he'll score before that double team gets there. Last night, he was just like, oh, the double's coming? Okay.
Yeah, pass it was like the open Thad guy. Young, Royce O'Neal double team, and he's like, got to get it out of my hands.
Right.
Come on, man.
Right. So they'll be ready for that, absolutely. I think they feel pretty confident going against that type of defense. But Minnesota, when healthy, is more equipped than anybody else to do it, probably.
I've had AG1 every morning for the last 2 months. It's literally the first thing I do every morning. One scoop of AG1 into a cup of water. And the biggest thing I've personally noticed is, one, I'm not having that mid-afternoon energy crash. And two, my gut health is just clearly better. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2020, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. Not only did I replace my multivitamin with AG1, but I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune health. I recommend AG1 to my family and friends because it is formulated based on the latest science. Even Kyle has started drinking AG1, and he's told me he also is feeling that energy and the nutrients that our bodies clearly need. Personally, I'm going to keep doing this because I've become a big believer in the importance of the first thing I put in my body to start the day being a good thing. AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why I'm excited to welcome them as a new partner. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs when you first subscribe. Go to drinkag1.com/Dane Moore. That's drinkag1.com/Dane Moore. Check it out.
Today's show is brought to you by Unified Healing. That's UNIFYD Healing. And whether you're a world-class athlete or just have an everyday 9-to-5, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. We see that all the time in basketball. You got to be healthy physically to win, but players are also at their best when their mental well-being is at its best. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the show. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Minnesota or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/Dane Moore to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/Dane Moore. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
What do you guys make of the super low assist numbers from Jokic against the Wolves? It was 3 in the first matchup for Jokic, 2 a couple weeks ago when they played, and then in the playoffs last year, it was 3 of the 5 games he was single digits as well. So I mean, I know it's the pick your poison thing, but he's pretty consistently picking the scoring poison against the Wolves, and a couple of those matchups are different, but for the most part it's within the construct of the four guarding him and Gobert coming over as help. Do you make anything of that?
I do. For me, it's a Jamal Murray thing. Because I think a lot of Jokic's assists come off of Jamal Murray pick and rolls, get to Jokic, and now he's surveying and reading the court. When you just give him a straight post up, Denver has some good shooters, and he obviously can get assists out of that or an elbow touch or whatever. But I think where he really breaks down defenses is off of that two-man game, even when it's not like an incredible pass from Murray, just like getting hit the ball and the defense is moving, and now he's attacking a scramble defense.
So that's where they broke him. That's where they broke the Wolves a couple weeks back, was those Jokic had zero assists until it was like 7 minutes left in the fourth. And then they started going to that, the Jokic-Murray two-man game. Mm-hmm. Jokic got 2 assists right there, and they kind of just I think they were both to Michael Porter Jr. after a double came and finding the kick out there. So I think it's I'm with that too. I think it starts with the pick and roll game.
Yoke doesn't want to play in the post every possession and like wait for the double to come and play that whole game. He wants to play in the middle of the floor. Like he wants to play at the elbows. He wants to play at the foul line. And that's where he can really like slice up defenses more. And maybe some of that also is, you know, when you're bringing that pressure in the post, he's getting the secondary assist a lot too. Probably,
yeah, that is probably true. And stuff.
I do think in the playoffs, he goes to the post a lot more. And, and part of me thinks, yes, you're right, that it's probably taxing. But I think a bigger part of it is that's where he's most confident. And I think he's just like, that's a break class. Like in playoffs, I'm going to hit that over and over. In the regular season, I won't post up as much. I honestly think that.
Well, it just keeps the onus on him then. Yeah. It's not about any sort of reliance on Reggie Jackson or Christian Brown or whoever hitting shots. It's just like, I can be, it's on me at that point.
Well, we go so far on Yoke. I honestly think there's another level of the post is almost all about him. And he's like, I don't need work. But I do need some work out here with KCP and Jamal and different stuff. And he's like, we'll use the reps in the regular season to do this thing. And I'll bust the post out when I need to. What else about this game? Any other thoughts or any other things that topics from this one that you think are so interesting?
I was interested by how they match up. I'll be looking at how Denver chooses to match up with Ant in particular. If Gordon is playing, in my opinion, that's the right move. If I were Denver, of how I would approach that.
Do you think that piece, though, real quick, to interrupt, do you think that would influence who Finch starts? Because if you start Naz Reid, you're more inclined to put Gordon on Naz Reid because Michael Porter's so small. Naz Reid's a big guy. Like, you might be scared there. So do you think that would influence at all if they're trying to force Gordon onto or off of Ant?
Well, to kind of, like, go against they put him on Luka point. Like, I think part of the reason they put him on Luka point was because they weren't afraid of Maxi Kleba or P.J. Washington or whatever hurting them on the side. If it's Naz or Kat that Gordon isn't guarding, you know, then that becomes, then they're gonna get Naz in the action a lot more, and they're gonna force, and Naz is tough. Like, to, you have to guard him against multiple different things. The pick and pop game is really there, but he can also take you off the dribble. So to your guys' point, if they don't put Gordon on Ant, it's because Naz and Kat are at such a level higher than, you know, PJ Washington or Maxi Kleber or those other solid stretch fours. But offensively, Carl and Naz are just on a different level there. So I think that's where, if it were a playoff series, that's where it would start to like formulate the paths of how the Wolves are going to play offense, which I think ultimately will determine a series against Denver. Is can the Wolves actually play good offense or not? They're going to play solid defense.
Right.
They're going to make it as tough as you can make it on Nikola Jokic, I think. But what level, you know, can they get to offensively there? And they're also like getting better at the big being up. Like, if I had to choose, like, in general, for the Wolves, a big that's dropped back to the rim to guard the rim, like, that's going to deter Ant some. And I know Jokic isn't exclusively blitzing every single one, but they seem more comfortable to me when a team is playing more in aggressive coverage, whether it's just at the level, just up a little bit more. I think the Wolves like playing against that. But honestly, what I was going to say to you guys is, like, when I'm parachuting in to watch Nuggets games and stuff like that this season, what stands out to me every single time is I think Jokic is playing the best defense of his career and by, like, a margin. Yeah. What's that come from this year? Is that true, I guess?
I think it's true, and that's probably the biggest difference from last year's Nuggets to this year's Nuggets is all season the defense has just been better. Yeah. You know, the numbers across the board have been
better.
Shout
out Ryan Saunders.
Shout out Ryan Saunders.
Honestly, for real.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
I forgot how incestuous these two teams are.
But no, Jokic has put in more effort defensively, like, absolutely. Typically, like, the joke that we usually talk about with him on defense is he spends the first half just trying to stay out of foul trouble so he can play aggressive defense in the second half. Sometimes that's still the case, but, you know, he set the tone at times, like, defensively just getting steals. I mean, his steals are he's gotten so many steals this season. It's ridiculous. You know, top five in deflections, I think, as well. A lot of that's kicked balls. But
Ant is not a great accuracy passer against aggressive coverage. Like, yeah, he'll get his turnovers against kind of some more of those crafty defenders, yeah, who are playing that, which Jokic, for whatever he lacks in speed, he makes up a lot of that for with just
being there. And I just think a lot of it is coming off the playoff run, like another year in the league, another, yeah, year playing the most complex defenses that anybody can throw at you, or complex, right, offenses, right, that, mm-hmm, anybody can throw at you as a defender. You've just seen everything. I mean, yeah, he just knows what's coming now at a level that he didn't last year, I feel like.
It really sticks out to me. Just remember when me and John came last year and we were watching the Nuggets play the Blazers. We came to the bar and we're watching the game, and it was Lillard, and he just cooked Jokic over and over again in that game. And I'm sure it's happened this year at some point, but in Nuggets games I've watched this year, there hasn't been like a major Jokic, seemingly Jokic-related defensive breakdown of like, this is where it comes from.
I think the other piece of it, though, is just defensive chemistry, which everybody thinks of chemistry as an offensive thing, but there's a lot of defensive chemistry, too. And this team group is now on year two together, and all your coverage is kind of knowing what Jokic can and can't do and, mm-hmm, how you have to cover for him probably plays a factor. But I definitely agree he's been a better defender. He even talked about it, and he talked about his own IQ getting better on defense, which is such a funny, specific thing to hone in on. You think of him having a perfect IQ, but offense and defensive IQ are different things.
For sure.
So let's get into this.
Hold on. How's Monte Morris been?
Dude, he's been really good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Finch, he's the first guy off the bench last night.
Okay.
Really? Yeah. Now Kyle Anderson is playing better, but there was some real issues early on in the season. Kyle stopped shooting threes, kind of lost confidence in that. And in the Wolves fan base, there was some frustration with the Finch obsession with Kyle Anderson. Mm. But Finch just loves those heady players. And he's getting to be like that with Monte as well. And Monte's making shots. He's guarding. Like, he's really, I don't know if it's just needing to fit into the best defense in the league, but Monte has been no issue defensively at this point. They're playing him at like the two sometimes too. Like, he was guarding Clay on Sunday or whatever that was when they played the Warriors. Like, he's really bought into the defensive part of this. And, you know, when we were talking about it at the trade deadline, it was like, well, you're maybe adding a weakish link, right, to the defensive chain. But no, Monte's been great. I think kind of had to work himself into shape a little bit, but the shot's confident and consistent. And really what they just need is like a guy that can stand in the corner that you just can't leave.
Yeah.
They had, I mean, Jordan McLaughlin earlier in the season, who now making every shot, but like they just had Kyle Anderson, Shake Milton, Jordan McLaughlin, all these guys that they were playing who they would just leave wide open in the corner, and they weren't hitting those shots. Monte, like, you have to have a body there, and that makes such a difference for Rudy on the roll, Ant on the attack. Like, I mean, Monte is within the idea that he's like a bench player. I mean, 9 out of 10, I would say he's been, yeah. And Finch loves him.
Do we have any 9 out of 10 bench players
this year?
Yeah. Watson, maybe, I don't know.
I mean, he's inconsistent.
Inconsistent, yeah. Well, the problem is Nuggets don't really have any veteran bench players, yeah, aside from Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, not a 9 out of 10.
not a 9 out of 10. Christian Brown's probably
the closest.
He's probably an 8 out of 10 right now.
Yeah, he might be.
8 out of 10.
All right, let's get into this ownership thing because it's so fascinating. It just came down. This feels like a train wreck in slow motion because I remember when the sale was first announced that Glenn Taylor would be selling to Mark Lowry and A-Rod, or a group led by those two guys, that there was this, yeah, but it's not a, it's a speculative deal. It was this weird deal. And now it comes down today, it's announced that the deal's off. Glenn Taylor team no longer for sale. You can take this into the specifics if you want to take it there. But to me, here's the big play. This stuff seems to happen to teams like Denver and Minnesota. Like, this feels like the most Minnesota thing to happen. A sale that is going belly up in the weirdest way.
Which just sucks because it's this is the best season, yep, in Wolves franchise history.
I think Glenn Taylor might have noticed that.
Could be a factor. But without going into every detail, to your point, Adam, it was founded on a bizarre premise.
Mm.
Obviously, just in the 3-year payment plan for it, of the idea, we're showing him the ropes, whatever. But I think it's even before that. In 2021, Glenn decided, I'm ready to sell the team. He hires a firm to handle the sale, the Rain Group. This is 2021. Keep in mind, we're in a global pandemic here. Right. Not everybody's totally willing to shill out billions of dollars, right? And they're not really getting any nibbles for like a year. And Glenn goes, Rain Group, you're fired. I'm going to figure out the new owner, who my successor is going to be on my own. And so I think Mark and Alex have their whole own part of this, but it all started to me with that decision, which makes it so Glenn is not blameless in this whole thing, even outside of the money and everything you're alluding to there. Like, he put this into motion. He agreed to these terms. He set them up because he didn't want to let go of the team then. He wanted kind of to slowly drift into the distance. So he set this up in place, and it started getting bizarre early with the payments. And you know, and this is the hard thing of like, I'm a reporter, but I'm a like sit in the scrum reporter, you know, and ask Kat what it felt like to have 16 rebounds or whatever. You know, it was a very weird thing to get for all of us to get any information on the whole time, because we don't know Mark Lori and Alex Rodriguez. We don't understand how these sales even work. And so, you know, you're asking around the whole time, and from the jump, you would hear so many different things of just confusing, completely contradictory. And you go to one side and you go, this is what I'm hearing. No, that's not true. And you go to the other side, you go to another place. And none of it ever made sense from the beginning. Yet, year one, Mark Lori and Alex Rodriguez are there courtside as minority limited partners in this thing. And it was like, they're the owners, but they weren't. They had not bought the team yet. They had even been slow to make their payment, their small payments. Then it was kind of like, all right, maybe we got to like slow the roll on this. They were told to kind of back off a little bit until they started making payments. Well, they started making payments. They got up to 36% of it. And in that time, start making huge changes to the organization. They make they're huge in the Mark Lori and Alex Rodriguez are behind the Rudy Gobert trade.
Right.
They're behind the acquisition of Tim Connelly. They're behind everything that has evolved this team. And not that Glenn wasn't a part of it, but it was like, wait, how are they doing this? Right. Why are they doing this? Tim Connelly got equity in the organization. Like, it was all, it never, it's been 3 years. I hate this whole thing. I'm so done with it. I'm just, particularly given the timing of all this, but it hasn't made sense ever for 3 years. And you're constantly getting the reassurances from the organization, from Lori's side, from whatever. Like, no, it's coming. And I was always skeptical about it because it was so bizarre. And then eventually you go, okay, well, they're making some payments. It's going to get taken care of. And even as a couple weeks, like 2 weeks ago, it was like, it's good. They got the payment. They got the money. March 28th, they will be the owners. They need to be approved by the league on April 10th. This is over. That was a week ago.
Yeah.
And here we are. Like, it is classic Timberwolves. And it's extremely disappointing. It's extremely disappointing for the fan base, who already has so much baggage tied to Glenn Taylor for 30 years of incompetence. And it just sucks.
We also just want to enjoy this season, too.
That's the thing, is the timing.
This comes in at 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the playoffs start.
Also, does it scare you at all that you go, like, the Glenn Taylor era wasn't exactly great, and here we have a great era, and it sounds like it's lining up, and then here it is, Glenn Taylor's back at the helm?
Yes, it does. But the most important thing to me is the financial health of whoever is running the team, particularly given where the Wolves are headed from a salary cap standpoint. Yeah. You know, and you guys just lived that, or are living and are going to continue to live that, and the luxury tax, and that's why you guys have a bunch of 1 out of 7 or 2 out of 10 bench guys, you know,
is
because of this, you know. And so that's what I'm focused on. And it is fair to say that Mark and Alex have questions surrounding their finances, which means there are questions surrounding their willingness and ability to pay a major tax. We're talking about like $100 million tax bill potentially to run this back next season. Glenn Taylor is more likely to be able to do that.
Okay.
That is the only, if I can polish this turd, that is the only bright spot on it is I think it puts them in a better financial situation for this summer where they need to make their most important financial decisions of ever.
This is the last question. It's unfair, but we'll get out on it. How long is this story? Is this a 2-week story, a 2-month story, a 2-year story? Go for starting now going forward.
I don't know, man. Today has been absolutely chaotic. And you guys probably feel this. When everything is weird in just the things you're hearing, it normally lasts longer than it's short, you know?
Right.
But I don't know because, again, and I think the reporting on all of this is going to be bizarre because it's where are you getting your information from? Mm-hmm. There are different points of context that are contradictory in this. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think the resolution I want to see is going to be there until I see them making the payments, not just to buy the team or whoever's running the team, but also making the luxury tax payments and keeping this team together. Like, that's why I think it's going to be a long story, because they're not going to come out and show us what they're going to do until you get to that point. So I think it goes at least until the summertime when you have a huge decision to make on keeping Cat or whatever it might be. I don't know. It's extremely bizarre. It's the probably the topic I've spent the most time talking to people on in my career.
Yeah.
And the one I have the least solid information.
Is A-Rod courtside again this year?
Oh yeah. He's there all the Lori has stepped back a lot.
But A-Rod, but I'm saying right now. Post this.
Yeah, he was there. He wasn't there last night.
But this is what I mean. Do you think he'll be there rest of the year? He'll be sitting courtside, or is this now?
I don't think he'll be sitting courtside on Sunday night when they play the Bulls. But he was there on Sunday night against the Warriors.
Got to make that last afterpay.
Nuggets Timberwolves Friday should be an excellent game. Means a lot to both teams. He is Dane Moore of the Dane Moore Basketball Podcast. Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Always fun.
How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around, yeah.